Thanks, Maria. It's good to be back with the cadre of folks that have been working on these issues through that report, which I strongly recommend to you, and the conference we held in New York in May, and to engage more people in the audience on these topics. So I'm a geriatric neurologist, and I want to introduce into the space a couple of words. One that really Ted introduced, although he didn't use it, this whole notion that health has to be looked at in a broader way than just a biology based on genetics and reductionistic kinds of approaches where we think magic bullets can be found. And I'll apply that to Alzheimer's, as Maria mentioned in just a minute, and suggest that that's a space in society where we need to do some really deep thinking about what it means and how we respond to it. And this notion that the response that you're hearing from everybody here is we need to work together more on intergenerative approaches. I'll talk to you about an intergenerational school, which is an illustration of bringing the generations together. But be it the professions, be it the generations, be it the dancers and scientists, there is a response that we need to make in society, which is all the more evident by the challenges that the East Coast and the Midwest are facing today, of thinking about different ways of addressing the challenges that we face. Danny George, who's going to be speaking next, co-authored this book, which took on this whole notion of what is the greatest challenge to brain health. And people would say, well, I think, you know, it's Alzheimer's disease, at least for older people. For kids, it's also cognitive challenges, because our cognitive abilities are important to our work in the world as individuals and collectively. But Alzheimer's is, in our view, not one condition. It is related to aging. And so we are, I think, about to use Alzheimer's as a leverage point to get us thinking differently about all the issues that are on the table here, which is our interconnectivity with each other and the very nature of what it means to be a human being. Very briefly, and if you are interested in further information about this, we have a website called The Myth of Alzheimer's. The Alzheimer's experts, of which I was one, are now defining something called asymptomatic Alzheimer's. These are official guidelines that say, if some of you are looking puzzled, you say, well, how can you have asymptomatic? Well, of course, you have to do that with biomarkers. So there's going to be a vast industry of testing people with a variety of measures to then give them drugs, which, of course, we haven't invented yet, but we promised to do so. And yet, at the same time, we're moving, and this is what doctors do with the Alliance of the Pharmaceutical Industry, these narrow, specific diagnostic categories that just need to be diagnosed and treated earlier. The irony is, some of you who are in this field may know that we've been saying for years that in order to diagnose Alzheimer's disease with certainty, you need to look for those plaques and tangles. But the latest guidelines suggest that no, in fact, the neuropathology is not definite, because we've learned that a number of people walk around the world making significant contributions, even if they have some memory problems, but without memory problems and plaques and tangles in their brain. This is just a little glimmer of the fact that we've got to really think about this fearful word differently. This New England Journal of Medicine article, basically what the pharmaceutical companies want to do is to have a statin for Alzheimer's. They want to give you a pill that provides you life management of your plaque-related amyloid metabolism, and that's the way they want to have us think about brain health, a matter of taking multiple pills. My own attitude is that, as somebody who's been in this neuroscience space, is that we need to understand genetics. Yes, we understand plaques and tangles. Here is Augusta Dieter in the panels, the first patient that Alzheimer described with these pathological features. But we need to bring the person and the stories that we tell into the foreground. So with David Satcher, graduate of our medical school and the first African-American director of the Surgeon General, we've created this conversation space between healthcare institutions and educational institutions to talk about how can we intergeneratively create a healthier community. Along the lines of that session that was described by the person in the audience who I also attended, how can you create a community that addresses health across all these much more than medical dimensions. My own writing has been on brain health, And we're trying to create a sense that brain health is more than just taking the right pills. This is the report that has already been mentioned and the conference that was held in New York, that brought together advocates for children, advocates for the elderly, advocates for the environment, and said, how can we build these communities that really address multiple social needs? I attended a session on resilience. How can you create resilient communities in the face of global climate change? So we had a health, we get adults of various ages together, medical students, nursing students. This was a health fair we did on lead poisoning, because I think it's responsible to say that lead poisoning contributes to late life dementia, because if you lose nerve cells when you're young, you don't have them when you're old. Danny George will be talking about his work on an intervention with people. We have people with so-called Alzheimer's who go to school with our 224 urban city kids and share stories and learn together. Danny's published this, and he'll talk a little bit more about that in his talk. We've had a strong commitment in this intergenerational school on engaging our kids and our adults in the in the ecosystem. So this is a book we just published with some older adults, some of whom have dementia now, who in the 1960s saved our nature center and the watershed from the devastation of having a highway put through it, the so-called Clark Freeway. So this school environment creates these intergenerational conversations about responsibility for each other in community and for the natural systems. And Danny's clever title for that article that on this individual was Occupy Nature, Passing Activism Across Generations. And I'll end with just one last slide. I have a few more to show, but I won't do that by just saying that what we're trying to do in this school, and I should say a word more about the school perhaps, it is the highest performing charter school in the state of Ohio, and it serves the needs of 224 urban city kids, but a variety of different elders, young adults and elders as I've shown. It has had health in a broad way in its mission from the beginning. Recently we've developed a garden and in the school to teach kids about local foods and their responsibilities for their watersheds. And in that, my storyline there is that I'm a neurologist moving his practice from a hospital into the garden. So we're working with the National Assembly of School-Based Healthcare to develop what we're calling InterWell. It's an interprofessional practice involving nurses and family medicine. It's intergenerative in the sense that we want to reinforce the messages that the kids learn in the school about their health and the health of their community with the messages they hear from the healthcare team in the practice. Because I'm a neurologist, because the brain is important for education, we do focus on this whole broader notion of brain health. Why do you want to keep your brain healthy? What do you want to accomplish? It's a self-empowerment model with the learners and the clients of the practice taking on more responsibility for their own health. And it is a blend of a practice that takes the health of the individual and their family members seriously in the context of health of the community. So we see this as one illustration on the ground of some of the principles you've heard earlier from the earlier speakers and some of the comments from the audience. And now Danny's going to broaden on that and talk a bit. Maria's going to introduce Danny, I guess. So thank you.
Thank you, Peter.